This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's now 7:36 a.m. on this Monday, October 8th. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Morning Run here on BFM 89.9. I'm Han, with me Joyce. Now, yesterday, China has cut the reserve requirement ratio for some banks. Those RRRs will be cut by about 100 basis points effective October 15th. The idea is to spur economic growth domestically. So on the line now, we have Stephen Innes, Head of Trading in Asia Pacific for Owanda in Singapore. Good morning, Stephen, and thank you so much for joining us. Look, Chinese markets coming back online today after that week-long holiday. So given the news over the weekend, right, this central bank's move to cut that reserve requirement ratio, how do you think that'll play out in the markets this morning?
Well, the RR cut was pretty much anticipated by traders. I think there's definite weakening tangent that the Chinese economy has been going on. And I think there was a call to action after last weekend's dismal PMI print. So, I mean, obviously the timing over the weekend is always a little bit surprising, but nonetheless, wasn't completely out of expectations. We've seen so far in the market's reaction, dollar CNH has moved considerably higher above the 691 level, predictably so. I still believe that there's more monetary policy persuasion yet to be delivered by the PBOC, and I expect further infrastructure spending because the Chinese economy is struggling not only from tariffs but from their deleveraging campaign over the last year. So I think we could be seeing this play out. I think there's a specific idea here that they want to calm investment sentiments, particularly around the equity markets. My view is it's just not enough. I think they're going to have to add more stimulatory effects. So while it will be perceived as a short-term positive, I think longer-term adjustments will be more significant and should play out effectively, because we know the PBOC and China administrator have got a massive war chest. If there's any central bank in the world that can affect the economy over a short period of time, it's definitely the PBOC. So perhaps three months down the road, the data coming out of China will reverse.
Now, Stephen, when you say war chest, are you talking about foreign reserves, though? Because that has dropped last month. In September, it's just hovering above the $3 trillion US dollar mark. That is still a drop of $23 billion US dollars in just that one month alone. So as a global investor, when you say you want longer-term solutions, what are we talking about here? Because if the RR cut is not enough and FX reserves are falling, what more can the PBOC or Chinese authorities do?
Well, first of all, on the foreign currency holdings, the reserve ratio, that's pretty much expected because the strength in the U.S. dollar. So that's gone up quite. The dollars, due to the safe haven appeal, which is accelerated because of trade war, that's part and parcel to that. But I think one of the structural issues that the PBOC are going to face is the weaker yuan could trigger waves of capital outflow. So this is why we're getting into some very sensitive areas right now. You know, it's 91. I mean, a few weeks ago, we thought 90 was the line in the sand for the PBOC. But, you know, I'm actually thinking it's more towards 7. So we're constantly watching how the PBOC is reacting to this weaker yuan versus capital outflows. I think that's a big destabilizing effect. But really what I'm referring to is them building, creating more infrastructure projects. I think this is the key. I think, you know, to a degree you can tweak monetary policy. I think they're going to continue to drop interest rates. I think they could even make some tax adjustments. So we've seen the positive outcome of tax adjustments in the U.S., and I think they could possibly go down that road too to stimulate domestic demand, because they certainly are really, really learning their lesson from their over-reliance on the export markets, because these tariffs are definitely having a negative effect on brick and mortars. So I think their real push now is to spur on domestic demand and move away from the traditional brick and mortar. So we're really paying close attention to China, as we always do, quite frankly. But I think the focus is even more intense, going to be even more intense on the months ahead.
Well, Stephen, turning to the U.S., last week, U.S. government bond yields hit fresh multi-year highs. And, you know, the 10-year Treasury note yield ended last week rising 3 basis points to a 7-year high of 3.227%. So what do you make of this speed in rising bond yields, and just how sustainable is this pace?
Well, we thought a few weeks ago when we were starting to see shifts from the real doves on the FOMC, like Lael Brainard and Chris Evans, that suggesting that they were moving to the hawkish side, it was sort of a signal that the market was pessimistic view of the FOMC rate hike expectations was way underpriced. So, you know, we thought this could happen. But obviously, the pace is what's surprising everybody. You know, 3.20 and 10-year yields, I wouldn't have guessed it this quickly, although I thought it was on the cards of a 3.25 target. Was certainly on the cards 6 to 12 months down the road. But when you have that happen in the span, we have a 12-basis-point rise in the span of a week, it's going to catch a few people off guard. And I think we're starting to see the effects those yields play out in a number of cross-asset markets, particularly in the equity markets. We're starting to see and feel some asset rotation out of equities and into bond markets just because of the attractive yields. But when you start looking at the combination of higher U.S. yields along with escalating risk aversion because of U.S. and China tensions escalating, this can ratchet up volatility exponentially. So when VIX is in the mix, and this is one of my favorite terms these days, I think investors are going to start reducing exposures to equity markets in particular. I think that's one of the more volatile elements in the markets right now. So I think we could see, you know, at least for the near term, an equity rebalance into bonds, safety of bonds, and perhaps global equity markets could continue to fall over the near term.
Yeah, Stephen, you mentioned that VIX is in the mix. We look at the VIX index right now. It was up 0.6% on Friday. The day before, it was up by 2.6%, so well above the 14.8 mark there. But the idea is, do you see any near-term catalysts that can stem or, you know, curb some of this volatility that we're seeing right now? We're not just seeing this sell-off in government bonds, not just in treasuries, Japan, Europe as well. Also, you look at equities, like you mentioned earlier, there's this risk-averse sentiment that's apparent here because the S&P 500, Dow, NASDAQ, all in negative territory. So do you see anything in the near term that can quell some of this volatility?
Yeah, I just think it's a de-escalation of U.S. and China tensions. I think that would be a real soothing element for the markets to kick in. You know, we have to remember that we're dealing not only with trade tensions now, but the spy chip event, the calamity that reared its head on, you know, Friday, it really caught everybody by surprise. Now, listen, I don't know what's going on there. I'm not privy to the tech industry, insiders in the tech industry. I can only take the Bloomberg's investigative report at face value. But it's sort of bringing up this context here that this could be the next battlefield. I mean, if there is evidence that China has been spying on the U.S. through technology such as chips, my God, this will make the tit for tat tariff war look like a game of access and allies. I mean, this could wreck markets going forward, given the heavy reliance on the tech sector. So we have to keep close ties on China U.S. tensions, along with this issue of in the spy chip area.
Stephen, what about the oil market? I mean, with at around 4-year highs and with the Brent closing above the psychological $84 level, do you see any more catalysts for oil prices, or do you think this level is as high as it can get?
Well, you know, there's just so much noise coming out of headline noise coming out of the oil markets now that it's getting a little bit confusing. I think there's a couple of things going on here. Obviously, everybody's, you know, factoring in the spare capacity issues in Saudi Arabia, but frankly, nobody knows what they really are. So that's the problem. So everybody's just guessing here. But what I'm focusing on this week are some headwinds. I think we started to see the market reverse some of that froth towards weekends, and I think that was primarily driven by the U.S. inventory report that came out on Wednesday that showed a considerable U.S. commercial inventory build. So I'm looking at stuff along the demand side of the equation. Okay, so we saw the Baker Hughes report print down 2 rigs, and that suggests that we could see more inventory builds in Cushing, the big hub for Permian Basin. That could weaken oil sentiment. But of course, we have to keep an eye on the global growth narrative, which seems to be waning. And we have the IMF meeting in Indonesia, and by all accounts, they're going to downgrade the global growth forecast. This doesn't play well, especially when emerging market currencies are weakening off so dramatically, and given the fact that EM currencies are really driving this recent waves of demand. It's not the mature economies like the U.S. and Europe, where consumption is relatively stable. So if you take the multiplier effect of this weakening of the weaker EM currencies, that even weighs more negatively on oil demand. So I think we're going to face some headwinds this week, although ultimately my longer-term view is quite bullish on oil. But I think we could go through a little bit of a retracement in the markets this week.
And I'm sure you'll keep us posted here as we continue monitoring not just oil prices, but other commodity-linked currencies. And of course, like you mentioned, China as well. Thank you so much. That was Stephen Innes, Head of Trading in Asia-Pacific for Owanda in Singapore. We'll be back with a look at some local business headlines right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.